Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, today talking to Mark Farley from UCHRA and also UCDD, as we found out. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. So listeners, knowing that I talk education, that may be the first thing they want to know. Who's Mark Farley, and what does he have to do with education? Which we'll get to that, and there'll be lots. Surprisingly, even myself found when I did a little research, saw how interwoven you all are with our education system in general. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from originally, how long you've been at in your position.
I'm born and raised in White County, still live on the family farm, been there. I'm the fifth generation lived on the farm, so I'll probably never leave White County, Tennessee. But tech grad, been in the upper country my whole life and been in government pretty much my whole career.
Now, is that something that, and I talked to a lot of principals, a lot of teachers, school directors, is that something that you set out to do? You thought, when I grow up, I'm going to be in government.
Don't know that I set out to do that. I've always had an interest. And, you know, I like to be involved. I like to have my hands into what's being done and sort of having a say in how the future is laid out. And I found the job I'm in now gives me that opportunity. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, has an influence, and it's mm-hmm. public service, yeah. and spreads across into so many different areas.
Yeah. Government gets a bad rap many times, but when it operates the way it's supposed to, it does a good job for the people.
Yeah, I agree completely. So one of the questions I always ask, being the education segment, is about a teacher. So somewhere in your life, who was your favorite teacher growing up?
Favorite one, fourth grade, Finley Elementary, Brenda Gear, and I hope she hears that. I've told her before. So I remember her reading to us every day. We just had a period of time, and I always remember she read where the red fern grows, and we loved it.
Yeah, fun to hear. It's fun. It's always fun to hear the influences, and it seems like of all the people I've talked to, so many are in that late elementary. Yeah. It is so influential. In that time. So let's talk UCHRA, UCDD. Explain a little bit about the difference in those, just to start us off, and what that role looks like.
Yeah, all across the state of Tennessee, there are nine regions the state is divided up into, and there is a development district and there's a human resource agency in all nine regions. And we operate under the direction of the local elected officials, so all the mayors, the county and city mayors. We've got state representative and state senator sits on our board, and they guide our work. And our job is to perform programs on a regional level that it doesn't make sense for the individual communities to do on their own. So like public transportation, rather than each county having their own separate public transportation system with a garage and the whole administration form of that, we do it on behalf of all 14 counties. So you've got the economies of scale, and it saves money.
Yeah. So it's a matter of being efficient as much as anything else, so you don't have duplication, which is a big deal these days.
Exactly.
There's a lot of news about things being efficient.
Yeah. And when you look at the two agencies, the development district is pretty much forward-thinking. It's more of a planning agency. We're looking into the future, trying to figure out where our region needs to go, our individual communities, and how we get them there. And then on the HRA side, the human resource agency side, that is more social service. It's dealing with the situations that people are dealing with today.
Yeah. And I know that just with my limited knowledge or observation or lack of interaction, not having to interact much outside of just the transportation angle. So, you know, I know mm-hmm. people who've used the transportation side. I didn't realize the depth of services that are available through UCHRA. Talk a little bit about a few of those things, and we'll dig a little deeper on some of those topics.
Yeah, some of the programs a lot of people will see and be knowledgeable of are public transportation. When you see the vans running around town, running on the interstate, that's probably our most visible program. We have on average around 100 vans every day out on the road. We did a little fun statistic the other day in last year, 2024. Look at all the mileage that we drove. We went to the moon four times back and forth. So we do a lot of trips, transport a lot of individuals that can't get there on their own. Many are in wheelchairs, but Public transportation is open for all. We do a lot of transportation for jobs, taking people to and from their work. So it's a vital service. Some of the others that we do those crisis situations. So when you find yourself down on the luck and you need some assistance, it may be rental assistance, food, and various needs like that, we've got programs that we can step in and help. We have limited funds like everybody else. We always have more on the waiting list than we can actually serve. But, you know, we do have programs to help people when they're down on their luck and need a helping hand. And then we've got a few programs that are more selective, and some of them you hopefully you never have to deal with. And we do a lot of court services, a lot of recovery services. So we're in the substance abuse world trying to make sure our region has all the resources it needs to help people who get addicted to drugs to be able to get off and get back to being a productive member of society. And hopefully it's one of those things we work ourselves out of a job. We get to the point where nobody needs our services, but that's really not realistic in our day and time. So,
Yeah, for sure. And having those services, so I know that a lot of religious organizations, a lot of churches provide a lot of those services, but there's too many people to help.
Oh, yeah.
In most situations.
When you look at the statistics, I mean, they say roughly 5 to 10% of the population has some type of addiction issue, whether it's alcohol or drugs. And, you know, when you look at our numbers, that's around 30 to 35,000 people across the 14 counties we serve. So there's far more in need than we've got resources to serve.
Mm-hmm. So with the resources, does that primarily come from the state, or is it partly federal or local? How does that work?
It's a mixture. We have federal funding that comes down that we're administering on behalf of our member governments. The majority is probably state funding that comes from the state of Tennessee. We do have some one-off type funding. When you look at our opioid work we're doing, it's through the Opioid Abatement Settlement Fund. So it's money that comes through the court system and is being distributed across multiple states. So it's any number of avenues that we're working through.
Mm-hmm. And trying to always decide where to put the funds.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's a big deal
Because
there are so many needs. And what does that budget process look like? Does that mostly come from your board of directors, or is it a day-to-day thing to try to figure out where the money flows?
A lot of our programs are just repetitive year after year. So like public transportation, very large portion of our operation. It's just ongoing every year and will be for as long as they have public transportation. Our board is very active right now. We have a really good leadership across the Upper Cumberland. They're trying to look and be forward thinking and trying to tackle some of the problems. So, you know, part of what we do is we look at the needs of our region and we try and figure out where those funding sources may come. We've been doing a lot of poverty work, trying to do some test work in trying to figure out how to move families out of poverty. And that come about through a pilot program with the Department of Human Services through the state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Any partnerships with tech on some of those things? And I know we talked just briefly about a few of those, but I know there's opportunities there with some of those programs.
That is one of the unique things about the Upper Cumberland. We are truly a team here in the Upper Cumberland. You've got your partner institutions that are a part of every initiative you have going on. Tennessee Tech, I say all the time, is our most trusted partner in the Upper Cumberland, the most trusted entity that we have. So they're always at the table. Coolville Regional Charitable Foundation through the hospital is always a great partner. Our local workforce board, Highlands with what they do through multiple counties. So we have a great partnership. It seems like anything that we're tackling together. And that really, it brings more resources to the table and helps our citizens benefit.
Yeah. Do you ever find it difficult to wrangle all those people, or are most people pretty willing to come to the table when there's a need?
Well, we're fortunate in that most of the people that's heading up the different groups that are at the table have been around for some time. And we know each other. We trust each other. But like anything else, you know, everybody has to defend their program, and sometimes they can do what we need them to do, and sometimes they can't. And we're the exact same way at the HRA. Sometimes we're able to do what our partners need out of us, and sometimes the government rules won't allow us to. So we work through it the best we can.
Right. Sometimes you have to pick and choose.
Exactly.
And that can be the hard part. And we were just talking about that at Tech, how you know, we would love to have the funding for one side of campus, but it's for now it's going to the other, or it's not coming because there's a different priority. And so I think to me, working through that from the administrative side, it can be difficult on a daily basis because you see the needs and you know that you can make a difference with just a little more funding.
Yeah. And, you know, our region, our counties, they drive a lot of the things that we do. You know, the substance abuse, it come out of a board meeting we had probably 7 or 8 years ago because employers were coming to our elected officials saying they couldn't find workers. They couldn't get people that could pass the drug test. And, you know, that's one of the things. The mayors only have a limited amount of resources and groups they can turn to. And they turned to the Development District and the Human Resource Agency and others here in the region and said, hey, we need your help. We need you to try and come up with it. So, you know, we've been working on that project ever since.
Yeah, and that's something that's a big thing to tackle. There's so many moving parts and minutia in solving that. I wouldn't even know where to start, without being in it on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think when you look, you're talking about education in the schools, probably the biggest effect that is on our schools today is the effect of the addiction issue that many people are dealing with, and that translates to the child, and it makes for an unstable home, and when they're unstable at home, they're not going to be stable at school, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and we'll dig into the education side just a little bit more. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking to Mark Farley from UCHRA about programs and things happening with UCHRA. And then we're going to dig in a little bit more to education topics and how that impacts education in the Upper Cumberland. Again, you know, it doesn't click quickly. You know the transportation angle, but you don't realize the impact that these programs, all these separate little areas have on the day-to-day operations of a K-12 school like Putnam County or the Upper Cumberland or White County. So let's talk a little bit about some of the programs that you are working on. Pilot programs, I get that at Tech. We're always trying something small to see if it works, and then hopefully we can scale it up if that happens. So tell me a little bit about the Bright Start program, what you're looking at.
We're very excited about it. We're about a year in. We've started really working on the child care issue, trying to figure out why we had a lack of capacity in the region. And we do. We have a huge vacuum of need for child care. And we started tackling that, like I said, about a year ago. And that led to the Bright Start Initiative, which is a project through the Tennesseans for Quality Early Education. And it's designed around trying to look at that early childhood learner from birth to third grade. And what we're trying to do is, obviously, we're not going to get into the school system and then the work of the educating the child, but how do we support them? How do we make sure the children are where they need to be when they start kindergarten? How do we make sure they've got quality early childhood options through daycares and those type of operations? How do we make sure that our families understand the right healthy initiatives they need to be following, you know, the nutrition and those type of things? So what we're trying to do with our Bright Start Initiative is sort of help our young parents, our first-time parents, really understand what they need to do to make sure their child's ready for kindergarten and they have the skills in place and they have the options available to them. You know, one of the things out of this initiative that we're learning is with the large number of children we have with disabilities, and what we've come to find that in the Upper Cumberland we have a real void in therapists that's able to provide those services. And we've got families that are on waiting lists for 6 months or more before they can get into any type of treatment. That's one of those things, talking with Tennessee Tech, we're trying to partner with them to try and see, is that something they can look to address through their curriculum to start putting out people who can do those jobs? So those are the type of things. How do you answer the questions of what's missing? You know, we have a term at the Human Resource Agency that our job is to fill the gap. So part of what we do is we look across our region, we figure out what we're missing. What does Nashville have? What does Knoxville have that we don't have? And how do we fill that? How do we make sure that our citizens have those same benefits?
And I love that you started pulling a team together, because a lot of times that early childhood, mm-hmm. even through kindergarten area, kind of gets overlooked. Like you miss the value. You hear a whole lot about third grade literacy and these things that are a little bit later on, but so many of those problems track back to that early childhood setting. And sometimes I feel like parents just they don't know what they don't know, or they don't have exposure. And so will that look like? What will those programs look like? Will that be curriculum? Will that be meetings? You know, what does that look like day to day? If I'm a new parent and I've got a new child and I don't really have access to opportunities, what does that look like?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to see. You know, with education now, we ask more about our teachers and our students today. There's far more that we need them to learn when they start school. We've got to start getting that child ready beforehand. And, you know, in the past, we've always had daycare, where basically we drop our kids off and they're taken care of. But there's not really been any curriculum. There's not been any teaching in that process. And I think the state of Tennessee now is at sort of that junction as they look at the vacuum that we have with the lack of capacity in child care. As they create that moving forward, do they make the investments to make it truly early childhood education, to where there is more curriculum that's being taught to the 2-year-old, the 3-year-old, the 4-year-old before they start kindergarten to make sure they're on track to be where they need to be? Now, it's not universal pre-K or anything like that, but just having a plan on how to work that child through the process to have them ready for kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you mentioned the price and availability mm-hmm. of child care, daycare, the vacuum. You know, it's increased astronomically, and there are so many reasons, you know, regardless of the reasons.
Well, I've got a stat for you that uh-huh. and I don't know. It's being publicized. I don't know if you've heard it or not. The cost for child care today equals the cost of higher education. So mm-hmm. what it costs mm-hmm. you to go – or a student to go to Tennessee Tech, it costs to put a child through – early childhood, and the point Dr. Howard was making a point from Tennessee Tech the other day in a meeting. You know, they can't get a scholarship for that, and they can't work their way through preschool mm-hmm. like a college student can work through a higher education. So, correct. It's got to be addressed.
Yeah, it does. And having all my children are out and have moved on from daycare and preschool now, but I have told new parents that. Say forget putting money in a college fund, put money in a daycare fund, you know, because once you find a good daycare, you know, and I know Tennessee Tech's Child Development Lab is a great example, mm-hmm. but it's also, you know, it's not cheap, you know, to have good teachers and good curriculum and reasonably small classes, it makes it difficult to, I mean, because we, you know, at the Child Development Lab, we have licensed teachers. Mm-hmm. And so that even increases prices even more to have licensed teachers. But across, there's not enough affordable daycare. It is a problem.
You know, I was talking to a young lady that works for me, and she was tickled to death today. Now, she is not long from delivering the child. And she's got daycare lined up, mm-hmm. and that's an accomplishment. We actually changed our personnel policies to allow mothers to bring their children in up to 6 months old, because what we were finding is they would go through the birth and they're 6 weeks and get ready to come back to work, but they didn't have childcare lined up. So mm-hmm. we had to make some changes in our own policies.
Yeah. Well, you got to get on the waiting list
exactly
when you find out you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And that is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad it's a problem that you are looking at to try to tackle mm-hmm. because it's a difficult one. There's no simple solution, but there's certainly, I think, are options
yeah.
to help with that along the way. And really, you know, across, I do think that pre-K, I don't think there'll be a required universal pre-K. I do think the state of Tennessee in general would like to see that service offered more. And I know Putnam County is moving yeah. towards a system, you know, possibly yeah. a single location where they could offer that more to more mm-hmm. people
yeah.
to have that available. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be opportunities to partner. But again, you know, someone else getting those kids prepared even to hit the pre-K.
Yeah. And it's not just pre-K. It's your before and after school as well, mm-hmm. you know. there's a lot of lost learning during the summer months and stuff. So if we had those specialized care opportunities that we're still giving instruction and some curriculum along the way, that just helps retention, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. And it helps prepare those kids. I mean, it's that trajectory where you're not worrying about it mm-hmm. when they hit third grade. Are they going to pass and be able to continue if they have a better foundation from the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
That's always the hope.
Yep.
So, okay, well, we're going to jump to a short break, and then we'll come back and wrap up with Mark Farley from UCHRA. Welcome back to Local Matters, talking to Mark Farley from UCHRA. So, been talking a little bit about education, a little bit about services with UCHRA. I think we just solved the preschool daycare problem for the Upper Cumberland. Got that squared away. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other education programs you have. I know that we talked a little bit about Empower mm-hmm. and how you're working on a pilot project with that. What does that look like? What's your vision for that program if it takes off?
That's a true collaborative effort between Tennessee Tech, the hospital, and various other partners, workforce development. I'm going to leave somebody out, but we've got a great team that's working. And we were very fortunate. Our region received a $25 million pilot program back 2 years ago or 3 years ago to reimagine what social services need to look like moving forward. So we've had the opportunity to work with a test group of around 700 families, and we've got room to add a few more as time goes on. But basically we're looking at, with these 700 families, what does it take in today's time to move them out of poverty? What is the barriers they're dealing with? You know, a lot of our social service programs that are in existence today were created in the late 60s and early 70s. The rules and regulations haven't changed very much. They were designed for a different time, a different population, and a different set of needs. Mm-hmm. So what is happening today? What does it need to look like moving forward over the next 10, 20 years? And, you know, that's allowed us to try some things, very innovative. We've worked with a lot of families on trying to get them into Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech's been working on a project to try and put together some mini learning pods that are able to let these young families experience what higher education would be like. You know, education is a key to getting out of poverty, plain and simple. A good education, a job will take care of 90% of the problems that you're going to have. So how do we make sure they've got the education to do the jobs that are coming to Putnam County and to the Upper Cumberland region? So it's allowed us to try some of those things. And what we're starting to see is success. We're starting to see some families move out of poverty and move to a point where they're not only able to pay their bills, but they're able to put money back. And that is the ultimate success, when you're able to be stabilized and put back for future issues and problems.
Yeah, and to be able to stand on your own 2 feet.
Exactly. And confidence is a lot of that. You know, we've got, in our day and time, a lot of our families are separated. They have no support group. You know, we've got so many people that's moved into our area here. You know, Putnam County has seen a boom in outsiders coming in. You know, a lot of times those families don't have the support network they need. They don't have the people that can lean upon and mentor them like I've had living in the same county my whole life. So, you know, part of it is just a confidence thing, helping them understand how they can be successful and getting over the fear of change. That's the biggest thing, is getting over that fear of change. You know, they're in a job that's paying minimum wage today. It takes a lot of courage to say, I'm quitting that job because I'm going to take a chance that there's a better job out there. And when you've got a family dependent upon you, it's hard. That's a hard step to take. And we've got to put people in their life that can help them see how they progress up the economic ladder.
Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting proposal.
Oh, yeah.
Conceptually.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously it's stereotypically handouts and not hand up. You know, I mean, that's just the stereotype, for good or bad. That's
there is a segment of the population that's the case. They're just looking to get by from day to day. But what we're finding is there's a lot of families, young families. Most of them are single moms, to be honest. They want a better life for their child, and they are willing to fight whatever it takes to get there. They're willing to work two jobs. They're willing to give up and sacrifice so that their children don't go through those same things that they've gone through. And, you know, there's a lot of fighters out there that's looking for that handhold to get to the next level. And that's the ones we really are excited about helping. They're mm-hmm. the ones that really can make progress.
Yeah. And that's exciting that for you all to be able to come alongside mm-hmm. and help support.
Oh, yeah.
And make a difference. You know, so growing up, my dad had lots of different – my mom and dad don't have college degrees, but my dad had lots of different jobs. And they were always there to support. And it was never – we never had a discussion about not going to college. Mm-hmm. My dad worked in the coal mines for a while and worked at the plants in Oak Ridge. And so I always had that support. You know, I always knew mm-hmm. they were very clear, this is not what you want to do. Here's a pathway.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine not having that support. It would be difficult to take a step.
It is. And, you know, everybody, when they think about education, they naturally think of Tennessee Tech. They think mm-hmm. about having that four-year degree. But we're blessed in our area with our technical schools, with our mm-hmm. community colleges. Our technical schools are our hidden gem. I mean, you can go there for a short amount of time, get that certificate, and it is what it is. A lot of times they're starting out at a higher wage than our tech graduates. Now, long term, our tech graduates may end up making more over the life of their career, but, you know, you've got the opportunity to graduate from a technical school and really have a good standard of living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those post-secondary opportunities, I feel like the school system is doing a really good job conveying the message mm-hmm. that when you graduate from high school, you need to pursue a post-secondary yep. opportunity, whether it's community college or TCAT or Tennessee Tech. You need to follow one of those paths
if
you want to be successful.
Yeah. What was it? Governor Haslam had the Drive to 55, which was a great initiative for us. We saw our educational attainment numbers come up, but you know, the whole premise of that was that our workforce of the future, 55% of it needed to have either a degree or a certificate. And mm-hmm. we're not where we need to be yet, but we're making progress.
Yeah, making progress. Certainly. I feel like I see that in the Upper Cumberland,
yeah.
certainly. So one of the other areas that I have a note for is, of course, there's education side of this, the Chance Girls Home, yeah. which has a fun history. I read a little bit about the location uh-huh. that where it's located. And so that's kind of a neat little sideline. Let's talk a little bit about that. But then obviously you've got teachers there and there's educational programs. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the background of location, but then what that education program looks like.
That's one of those, you know, sometimes you get a job, you inherit some things you didn't realize you're going to get into. And we do operate a school there at Chance Girls Home. And basically what it is, it's a facility for girls either coming through the foster care system or through the court system that a judge has deemed they need to be put someplace. So we can take up to 16 young ladies, and they're anywhere from 12 to 18 years old. And our job is basically to raise them. We've got somebody with them night and day, and then we operate our own school internally where we're educating them. And we actually can, I think, actually technically degree people from our school. So, but it's a unique opportunity we have to have an impact in these young ladies' lives. And, you know, one of the success stories we've always inherited from that is how many young ladies we've had that went through Chance, that's gotten on the straight and narrow path or got their feet underneath them, and they come back to give back. They come back to work at the facility to give back to the future generations of young ladies that need that mentoring. So,
mm-hmm. That's the ultimate reward with a yeah. program like that is to see those success stories along the way. With the teachers, so what kind of type of curriculum do you offer? Do you have a bunch of teachers or just a handful that handles most of it?
Yeah, we have to have a special ed teacher. Mm-hmm. So we just have one, and we have a teacher's aide that works with them. So.
That works through.
Yeah, and then we have counselors and stuff. It's there available throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Lots of different services because,
yes.
you know, obviously in some ways you need to meet those needs. Do they receive a typical high school diploma as they flow through, or is it more a GED pathway?
It'll be probably a mixture of both.
Yeah, some of both.
Some of those young ladies are just there because they don't have any place else to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not a behavioral issue. It's not a learning issue. They just don't have there's nobody to take them and no place for them to go. And So they have the ability to be there, and, you know, they're going to make far greater progress than somebody that has some behavioral issues. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it, just in general, yeah. Educationally, a smaller group of people.
Yeah.
You know, we sometimes see success at the White Plains Academy just because it's a smaller
yeah.
learning environment.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the student needed versus being in a class of 30 people.
Yeah.
For example, how long is the Has that the Chance Home been in operation with you all, ballpark?
It's probably been there 20-plus years. It's on the campus, the little military school you had, was it DeBerry?
DeBerry is what I read.
I remember going there when I was in middle school playing basketball or something years ago, but it's on that campus. They bought it a long time ago, and we've maintained it. We used to have two homes for boys, but COVID really – They were a casualty of COVID. We couldn't maintain. The court system quit sending young men to us, so we had to close those down. So, mm-hmm. So we just have the one for girls now.
Yeah, I think I read it was kind of a church camp for a while, yeah. and then it was converted into the girls.
Yeah, so it already had a big dormitory. Mm-hmm. The setup is very conducive for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's good to have. And again, you don't think about needing those things. Yeah. Until you need those things,
yeah.
You know, you don't realize if a family doesn't even consider that that's there until the need is there.
Yeah.
But obviously there is a need. Are you at capacity there, or do you have capacity for more people?
Well, we have capacity. Now all of ours come either through the court system or DCS. Mm-hmm. So we're at the mercy of them giving mm-hmm. us girls. So.
Yeah. Because you hear. In the news, you know that there are places with DCS where the kids having to sleep in offices because yeah. there's not space, and so I didn't know in terms of services if you were at capacity or yeah. or you had space.
Now we're not quite at capacity right now, but it's more of a staffing. We're like everybody else; we're struggling. We have to have certain numbers to be able to meet, and we're down a little bit on staff right now. Had some turnover.
Yes. Okay. I
could. So, if there's somebody interested in working with young ladies, and they're interested, see us. We're looking to hire some right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you know that there is a need there, and I'd say it takes a special person.
It does. It takes the right person. You mm-hmm. know, that can handle 16 young ladies that all have their own needs and issues they're dealing with. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar to teaching in that
yeah.
you takes a special person. You yeah. have to have a calling for it, or you won't be successful.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have that calling. So, mm-hmm. All right, well, we've about reached the end of our time. So I appreciate you coming out and talking.
Thank you.
Sure there'll be opportunities for any of the listeners that want to reach out and help or ask questions. We'll send them your way.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thank you.